What's going on, comic fam? It is your boy, the Bearded Comic Bro, and I am joined by comic creator Lizelle Bueno Ventura. And I know I butchered your name, so I apologize at the end. I'm so bad.
No worries. Hi.
Awesome. Well, you are the writer behind the series from Mad Cave Studios. They Fell from the Sky, and I'm excited to talk about that. You were so gracious enough to send me a preview copy, and I got to check that out, and so much goodness in there that I'm excited to hear. We're going to talk about everything around the world of comics with, because you have been in the game for a while, and I'm curious. I always like to know, how did you get into comics?
Right. So I got into comics a long time ago, from 2008 to 2009-ish. I started as a comic colorist, and I got my first gig through comic forums. I don't know if those are still around, but back in the day, before social media was a huge thing, there were comic forums. And if you were just starting out, that's where you would kind of look for gigs with working with other indie creators. And I got my first coloring jobs from comic forums. And then fast forward many, many years later, in 2019, I joined the Mad Cave Talent Search for writers. And I think they also have one for artists, but I mean, I joined the one for writers. And I was one of the winners for writing, and that's how I got started with Mad Cave specifically as a writer, because I never professionally written anything before then. But I've always liked to write short stories. I just never had the guts to try to sell any of them. So my writing story was in 2019 with Mad Cave.
Well, I was going to ask you, because you said you've been doing coloring, you know, you've been a colorist for many years doing comics. I know you work on Savvy Bunny with Scout Comics and you've a bunch of other indie titles. What was that switch, though, that made you want to go from being a colorist to dipping your toe into the water of writing?
Right. So I think that, if you've been doing anything for a really long time, I'm not going to say I'm bored, because I'm not bored with coloring. I'm still doing it up to now, but I would say it's like a 40-year-old itch, but I'm not 40, 3 years more, but getting there. You know, I felt like it was time to try to do something with my writing, because I really enjoy it. But I've never had the guts to try to pursue it professionally. And I love visual arts. That's always been my profession, and you know, that's what I majored in university. But there's something about writing that you feel like I need to do it. And when I saw the talent search, I was like, you know, I can try. You know, it can't hurt to try. And if this very established publisher thinks I'm good enough, then you know, I felt like it was time. Nice. So yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, because you know, it's just so cool to see, because you said, you know, sometimes you just want to try, you know, your hand at something else for a little bit. You're not necessarily bored with what you're doing, but you want to explore what else is out there and things. I think that's really cool. And I think that's awesome that you did that. And like, oh, hey, I decided I'm going to try my hand at writing, and you won the contest. So apparently it was
there were four of us. So I'm not, you know, there were four very, there were three other very talented writers who also won. So yeah, just
but that doesn't take anything away from you. So
thank you. You're very kind.
So let me ask then. So we're talking about They Fall from the Sky. And this is, as you've said, your first hand at writing a comic. What is this comic about?
So at the basis of it, it's about a 12-year-old boy named Tommy. And it's about his new friendship with an alien. I can't even tell you the alien's name, because it hasn't been revealed yet in issue one, and it would be a spoiler. So that's the kernel of theme that we're going with, which is very much, you know, removing the alien part. It's basically a boy and his dog trope. You know, that it's that story. And I am aware that it's been told, you know, many times before, but hopefully this is with my voice and, you know, people enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah. And we're going to, I think we'll talk a little bit more about, you said, you know, at the baseline, like this is what it is. So where, you know, you said like, it's a story that you it's been told before, but this is more your voice. Where did this idea for this story kind of resonate with? Where did it come from?
Okay. So with a talent search, each winner was assigned a brief, and this was mine. So my brief was basically a very, very short write-up of the theme that they wanted to touch on. So for sure, it had to be about a young boy. For sure, it had to be his friendship with an alien. And then everything, like I fleshed it out. I made the character Bible, et cetera, et cetera. So when I saw my brief, I was like, it reminded me of the 80s. So I was born in 83, and I kind of had a lot of experience with E.T., Lilo and Stitch much later on, but the Goonies, Stand By Me is another favorite. So I really like that sort of genre when I was around 12, 13-ish. And recently it has been coming back, right? I mean, with Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And even before that, what's that movie? Super 8.
Yes.
And right? Yeah. And that was, I love those. And great I like movie. The fact, I like the fact that they captured the spirit of the genre, but made it for now. Because if you watch Stand By Me, it's like no one has a cell phone. No one, like, you know, I mean, I feel like it's not, it might not be too, it might not resonate too much with this generation just because it's so dated. But again, love Stand By Me. But yeah, so I was hoping to capture the spirit of that, the essence of that for this generation.
Nice. Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's such a cool thing. You said it earlier in your first answer when we were talking about the book, like the kernel of it is that the story is about the boy and his, you know, an alien and kind of like a boy and his dog, that relationship. But when you get to that surface, you get below that surface level, you see a lot of the other characters that are in the book, Tommy's mom and his dad, his older sister, even the bullies in school and things like that. But the relationship between Tommy and his family, which are all unique stories, they seem to dominate issue one. And so it seems like it's going to be something that is prevalent to this story. Where was that kind of basis of this family dynamic coming from?
Okay, so I felt like it was really important to establish Tommy as a character. I feel like we kind of live and die by the protagonist. And often sometimes we see cool concepts and they don't hit as hard or they kind of don't allow readers to empathize with the main character because you don't see much of them or enough of them. And I really wanted to make sure that we established Tommy because the alien is already interesting by virtue of being an alien, right? I mean, it's already going to be like most people are going, oh, he's so cute and stuff like that. But it was important that we know who Tommy was. And, you know, when I was writing Tommy, I thought about myself as a mom, myself as a parent. I thought about how I was as a 12-year-old kid, you know, who wasn't ever popular in school, who liked comic books. And I'm sure many people can relate to feeling not quite like you don't belong. And my son is 6 right now, so he's not yet at that age. But, you know, I mean, I can see his personality. And of course, you know, I use as much as I can from real experiences, whether it's me as a parent or me as that child, that 12-year-old child. I feel like it's important to put as much real feeling, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Even though I know I was never a 12-year-old boy, you know, I mean, but there are shared experiences across generations that are kind of timeless. Yeah. And, you know, feeling not quite that you fit in or that your parents don't understand you. We kind of all go through that stage, or something close to it. Yeah, so that's kind of where I was coming from, in terms of the fact that there was so much drama, or perhaps not drama, but like character building in issue one. Because once issue two hits and we really meet the alien, then things kind of become more about their friendship together.
And I love that answer, because I would never have thought of it like that. Like the way you said, like, yeah, you're going to care about the alien because it's an alien. Like, why would you not care about it? But because of the world building that you've done in such a short time with just issue one, I'm already invested into Tommy as a character, you know, and I want to know, you know, more about him. And I'm curious now of, he brings him up to the level of the alien, as in like, you're going to hopefully be invested in both these characters, where then he doesn't become a side character in his own story, it seems like. So
right. Yeah,
that's such a cool thing. I know you said that you got connected with Mad Cave through the talent search, that you decided that you wanted to write, and you know, it was just trying to do something new. What was that process of going through the talent search like for you?
So this has been like almost 2 years. So I'm trying to dig through my brain. I feel like 2020 was, instead of being 1 year, it was like 5 years.
It really was.
Right. But yeah, okay. So it was early 2019. And the requirement was that you were an amateur. Like, you couldn't have been published as a writer, from an established publisher. Like, you could have self-published. Like, it's okay if you were already writing for your own, like for conventions and stuff like that, it's fine. But you can't have been published by, you know, a mid-level publisher. Right. And the requirement was that you look at their current slate of books and you write a short comic script. I can't remember what the minimum or maximum was, but I wrote 8 pages. Okay. So, I mean, I wrote an 8-page short comic about Midnight Task Force, which is one of their existing properties. Mm-hmm. And I know that one of my co-winners wrote a short comic about Battle Cats. So, I mean, it's, you know, you just pick which one is your favorite. And I picked the sci-fi one, obviously. I mean, that's the genre I enjoy. So so I wrote a very mean story, I always find it funny because Midnight Task Force is extremely adult. It's extremely adult cyberpunk sci-fi.
Yeah.
And the story I wrote was very much in that genre. So I was always a little amused at the fact that I got assigned an all ages book based on that really evil story that I wrote. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Prior to that, I had already been trying to write comic scripts, but again, nothing ever came of it. You know how you always think, oh, I'm going to do my own comic, and then you write something, and then, you know, but I never had the guts. And I really liked the fact that it was a talent search. It was open. You know, I'm from Manila, Philippines, so it's kind of hard for me to go to conventions where the mid-level publishers that are accepting, you know, pitches go to. So it was such a huge help that you knew they were going to read all the entries. So, you know, I mean, that's a big deal. And yeah, it was great. So yeah, I feel like it's a really good experience. And by that time, I already knew how to write I knew the format of comic scripts, just because I always read them as a colorist. So, you know, just from that experience of, you know, working in the industry, even though I wasn't a writer, it helps. I mean, every little bit helps, I think. So yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's so cool to just, you know, that comes through with that. So you just mentioned again that you know, and we've talked about it already, that you got your foot in the door with comics being a colorist. Let's talk about that a little bit. For someone that's watching, I typically do interviews with writers, and which are, but you also are a colorist. So I actually haven't had a chance to have a colorist yet on my show. So what is that like, being a colorist for a comic?
I think it's a lot of fun. there's a huge difference between being a writer and a colorist in terms of the stage in which you come in. Yeah. So obviously, you know, if you're the writer, you come in at the very first stage, and if you're the colorist, you're at the tail end. Yeah. And I think all of you, like the writer, penciler, if there's an inker, and the inker, the colorist, the letterer, you all have to focus on telling the best story possible. But as a colorist, you come in at the very end of that process. Sometimes publishers letter a book before they color it. Sometimes it's lettering comes after the coloring. It really depends on which publisher you're working with. And I feel like the most important part of being a colorist, personally, is knowing when to go in and when to hold back. And never try to be the colorist, you know what I'm saying? It's always like, will this work for the story we are trying to tell?
Yeah.
You know, does that make sense?
Never
try to be the superstar, because you're not. You always have to be part of the team and do what's best for the book, I guess.
Yeah, no, yeah. That makes sense.
All right.
That makes absolute sense. You said you've done Stabby Bunny. What are some other comics that you have done work on as a colorist?
Okay, so just for Scout, because Stabby Bunny did quite well, we had two spin-off series from it, which was Stabby Ever After and then Shadow Play. I'm not sure, because again, 2020 is like a blur.
It's a long year.
Right?
It was 5 years
back in one. Right, exactly. I think the last thing I colored was Shadow Play, the final issue, which was, I think, the giant fifth issue or the giant sixth issue. I can't remember. Yeah. Sorry, like my brain is like mush. And like for Stabby Bunny, we did, I think, 11 or 12.
Yeah.
I don't know, terrible with numbers. Anyway, but yeah, so Shadow Play is, as far as I know, it is over. With that giant issue. And then Stabby Bunny is on, like it finished the arc, but it's going to continue. So sometime this year, I think we're going to start up again. But I'm not entirely sure when, because, you know, all the schedules got really messed up. Like, I'm sure, you know, for people who collect comics, it's like, what do you mean? It's not coming out for another 6 months. Like, right. Yeah. I mean, it's the same for us. Like, we don't know what's happening. So that's what I did for Scout. The other recent publishers that I worked with, also that I have worked with for a while, one of those is Chimera Press. I do the Ivory Ghosts series for them, and we did two more issues last year, but they haven't been released yet. Mm-hmm. So I think this year for sure it'll come out soon. And then I also did work recently for T-Pub Comics. I did the Theory for them before, which is their giant anthology.
Okay.
I mean, if you like sci-fi, definitely. Like, it's, I would liken it to Black Mirror. I really enjoyed reading the scripts when I was, when I was doing the
cover. You had me right there, so.
Yeah, so that's called The Theory. And then that was out already a couple of years ago. And recently for them, I did a series called Amputation Capital, which should be coming out this year as well. So,
nice. So, like I said, I know you've been super busy doing everything and now you're doing your writing. So I got to ask you, how was it like having someone else be a colorist on a book that you wrote?
I mean, I think it's fine. Like, so when you work with a publisher, because I was working mostly in creator-owned indie books before. When you work with a publisher like Mad Cave, you do have an editor, and the editor is the director. So he wrangles all the pieces and he puts them together. And I stuck to my part. I stuck to the writing part. And then he guided everyone else along the path. In terms of having another person color my work, I feel like my experience as a colorist allowed me to be able to pinpoint the notes in the script that I could address to the colorist. Like, for example, a flashback scene. I know that that's the colorist's job to tint, you know, a scene. And I actually put that in my script notes. Please, dear colorist, please tint, et cetera, et cetera. So it's clear that it's a flashback. Stuff like that. So, you know, I feel like it makes me more aware of what goes into what. And I don't ask for things from my, from the awesome, awesome penciler, Xavier Torrega. I don't ask things for from him that I know would actually be someone else's job, I guess. Yeah. So yeah, I thought that was fun.
Well, the editor of the book did a great job putting this team together, because your story paired with the art in this book is just a beautiful, like, sometimes you get a script where I feel like you're reading a book, you're like, I like the story, but the art just doesn't do it for me, or vice versa.
Right,
and
right.
I think they just blend perfectly. And I can't imagine it in a different art style with your voice behind it. So it was a great job from everyone involved.
I'm so happy. I agree.
So I know, because that's good and cool to hear, though, because, like, I know so often when you're working in comics, especially once you're doing with some of these publishers, you have your writers, your inkers, your colorists, you're all working together, your letters, to put together something. And I think it's really cool that you being a colorist, you've got to see some of that, like, well, what would they want? Well, you would know what you would want from a writer when you're doing a colorist, and you would also know what you don't want, of like, don't give me too much. Mm. Let me do whatever. So I think it's kind of cool that you have that basis. It probably helps make you as a creator more well-rounded. So.
Mm. I think it really depends as well on, like, the type of colorist you are and the type of writer that you're working with. I think that as a colorist, I've just by virtue of, you know, doing it for a long time and experiencing a very diverse and wide variety of writer creators, you have to be the one to kind of be bamboo, you know, like you bend. Yep. Which way the writer you're working. Like, I have worked with writers that gave almost nothing in terms of color direction. And that's fine, because they paired that attitude with a very, I hired you for a reason, I trust you type of experience, work experience. And then you've got some writers who know exactly what they want and are happy to give you samples and stuff like that. And I think that's fine too, because, like, if you're a writer and you know exactly what you want, then by all means send me pegs, because you know, so then at least I have an idea instead of, oh, is this what they wanted, or is this what they want? You know, I have experienced both types of writers and in between, and that's fine. Like, as long as everyone is nice, I'm okay. I feel like that matters a lot. Like, you can be very specific, but also as long as you're nice about it and no one is being talked down to, it's okay.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah. I think when you can have those lines of communication open and you have that sense of respect for each other, it's whether it's enough notes or too little notes, it doesn't matter, as long as you have that respect of, they respect me, I respect them. And I think that's really cool to hear, because we just need more of that in the world anyways, as people. We just
agreed.
So I think that's a great to take that from comics and just put that into real life as well. So let's get back real quick to your series that you're writing for Mad Cave. How long is this series? Do you have it? I know you have some of it written, because you keep almost dropping the name of the alien, but you haven't yet.
Okay, so the entire series is in the bag.
Okay.
I wrote the first issue over a year ago, and issue five, it's a mini series, five issues, all of it is done, including the line art. I'm not quite sure if the coloring has finished all the way up to issue five, but I mean, I'm pretty sure that it's done or almost done. We did it a long time ago. That's why when I was like, oh, can I please have advanced questions, so I just so I know, like, what I'm going to be talking about, because you know, this happened 10 years ago. No, I'm just kidding. It happened a year and a half ago. So yeah.
But let's be honest, 2020. Yeah.
Go. 10 years. It's been 10 years. Oh man. Just, 2020.
Yeah. Well, as someone who's written it and it's been up there for a year, I'm like, you probably are thrilled to start to see it come out and to get to start to share this with everyone else. And
yeah, there's a part of me that's very, very excited, and there's a part of me that I'm so anxious. You know, it's I think that's common for like first time, you know, like when it's your first time in any job, you're always like, oh my God, did I do okay? Did I mess up? And it's been a while, and I had actually kind of not forgotten about it, but it had kind of just faded into this kind of, oh, I'm excited for it. But then, you know, I'm just waiting for Mad Cave to say, hey, you've got a release date. Now that it's actually going to be like in a couple of weeks, I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't even know how to explain it. It's intense.
So what is, for people that are watching, what is the release date for your book?
I think it's like the first week of Feb in okay. the US. So in the Philippines, I'm not quite sure. We usually get it at the same time, but maybe there are some shipping delays or et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, around that time would be a good time to check your local comic store.
Yes. So if you are just, gang, if you're watching this show and you like sci-fi, you like stories with heart, you want to check out this book. They Fell from the Sky is a great read. I'm excited that I don't have to wait a year to become the fruition like you did, so I'm excited that I get to read it. Is this in this 5-story arc? Is this something you imagine you're wrapping up with this arc, and that this is it for this world that you've created?
Yeah, it's definitely a definitive story.
Yeah.
It's really up to Mad Cave if they want to continue in the future, but like this is a cohesive story. I mean, I planned it, so it's 5 issues. That's why the first issue feels very much Tommy centric, and because I knew I had the 5, and you know, there are arcs and stages and stuff like that. So yeah, you will get a full story out of this.
Awesome. What do you have, anything else that you have coming in the world of comics? I know you said a couple of stuff that you've already worked on that's coming out hopefully this year. Is there anything else that you want to share with us?
The Amputation Capital series is ongoing, and so it should be released sometime soon, but I'm also going to be working on it. And also from 215 Inc., a miniseries called Fairytalia, and of course the series from Chimera Press. So those should be coming out soon. I will post on my Instagram if any of them are out. But yeah, those are all coloring, by the way. For writing, I am working on a personal project, and here's hoping I finish it. But yeah, I will post on Instagram if I have any news about any of the projects.
Awesome. So where, well, with that being said, where can people find you? I'll post all of these links below, but where can people find you? Best way to keep up to date with what you are working on, what you're creating.
Right. So I really just am on Instagram at Lizelle Buenaventura. And then I have a Facebook, but and my username is Liz Buenaventura there. But yeah, if you're looking for updates, Instagram would be the best bet.
Awesome. Well, Liz, thank you so much for just taking some time and talking comics with me. It's been a blast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited for people to check out this book. I'm loving what Mad Cave's putting out. And I know you said you're nervous. You get nervous about the release, but I'm telling you, gang, you want to pick it up at your store. So again, thank you so much for hanging out and just talking comics with me. With that being said, everybody, hopefully you can find some time to curl up, grab a book, and nerd out. Peace.